supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we take on a question that I think everybody out there has thought about at one time or another. We see all these ivy-covered buildings, a lot of them on great university campuses, but a lot of them just on regular buildings. And we think, is this a good idea or is it a bad idea? We'll talk about what it is in the question of the week, but mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens. You know what that means. We're taking that heaping helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Gloria, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Gloria. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm calling you here from Laverne, Tennessee.
Oh, what a beautiful name of a town. What can we do for Gloria in Laverne?
My house has lacked all kind of curb appeal, and finally, last fall, I decided to add a little bit of a splash of color and planted a variety of flowers and plants. But now I have been noticing some tiny holes on the leaves of just about everything I planted. Anything that has large leaves have these little circular perforations, round perforations.
Does it look like almost somebody took a miniature shotgun to the leaves?
Exactly, or like somebody got something to just puncture it, like maybe a tiny little needle mark.
Right, but lots of tiny little round holes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What kind of plants are we talking about here, Gloria?
Okay, well, mainly I have seen them on my hostas. My backyard is very shady.
Right.
And so I find out that hostas like shade, and they're all over them. And then in the front, which is very sunny, I had a few hostas, but I also have some climbing roses.
Right.
And I've seen them on both.
And it's the same damage on both sets of plants?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The damage you're describing is flea beetle damage. It's very specific. These are tiny little insects. They're very hard to see. But I don't equate them with attacking roses and hostas. They are incredible nuisance pests on eggplant. I was just at a community garden I helped plant, seeing how things are going on, and they had row covers over the eggplant to protect it from the flea beetles. But I'm not used to flea beetles attacking plants as you've described. I tell you, when people tell me they have problems with their hostas, there's two things that immediately come to mind. If large parts of the plants are missing, it's deer, because hostas are one of their favorite foods. And if there's holes in the leaves, it's generally slugs. But slugs make pretty big ragged holes in the leaves. But just to placate me, just to humor me, do you have a beer in the house?
No.
I need a beer, no. Gloria.
Me too. No, I don't drink beer. Wine,
okay.
Maybe, but not beer.
Do you have wine doesn't work. Do you have a neighbor who you might be able to bum a can or a bottle of beer from?
Oh, well, yeah, I can get some from one of my sons.
As soon as you get the beer, when the sun goes down, any night it's not raining, fill up a couple little dishes or margarine tubs with fresh beer, leave it out overnight, and see if we catch any slugs. Because it would be unusual for slugs not to be involved. Now, I have to tell you that flea beetles are a difficult to control pest. Is your garden mulched?
Yes.
With
pine needles.
Okay, that's fine. Do you feed your plants anything?
No, I cannot say that I do.
You are going to have to go out and you're going to have to buy an organic insecticide.
Okay.
These things are very safe, and you should be able to find one or the other. But you want a product either called Neem, N-E-E-M, or a product whose active ingredient is spinosads, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. And if you go to a bigger garden center and tell them you want an all-purpose organic insecticide to spray on leaves to protect them against chewing insects, they'll offer you probably either neem or spinosad. And the only thing I want you to do is be very careful you don't spray any flowers. Just spray the leaves.
I see.
Because these things can harm bees if the bees come and are taking pollen off of things that are sprayed. But if you just get a little, you know, quart-sized bottle and you spray the leaves to protect them, that there shouldn't be any harm. And then I want you to go to youbetyourgarden.org. And then when you get there, right at the top of the page, it says Garden Answers A to Z. Go to F for flea beetles and read that article. And also, you know, check a couple pictures of flea beetle damage, because it's exactly what you're describing, and I don't know of any insect that does similar problems. And you haven't seen anything. You haven't seen any large beetles during the day or anything like that?
No.
In your case, you're going to need an organic insecticide, spray it on the leaves, and then do that beer test for me, because I think you probably have slugs wandering around out back.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Very, very helpful advice.
Well, thank you, Gloria. You have a good summer.
You too. Have a terrific summer.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. How you doing?
I am doing just fine, John. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I have a question about strawberries.
I have a question about John.
Okay, sorry.
Where is John good?
Philadelphia.
Where do you live?
In Manayunk.
Oh, okay. The famous Manayunk Wall. We just had the bicycle race there, right?
We did just have the bike race, yeah.
All right. What can we do for John in beautiful but kind of mountainous Manayunk?
Well, I've got these strawberries, and they're producing, like, you know, a pint to a quart, you know, every other day or so. And then a couple weeks ago, I came out, and they were all just stark white.
Mm-hmm.
And that hadn't happened before. They'd always been that kind of green-white. You know?
Right.
And then after a while, they did turn red, but they just weren't quite the same.
Okay.
They weren't the same size, and they weren't like a weird shape, or then they weren't fuzzy or anything. They were just white, and then they got a lot smaller, not quite as sweet.
First of all, you're picking pints and quarts of strawberries. I maintain you have no complaint, sir. You know, you sound more like you're bragging to me.
It was doing really well, and then it just all of a sudden they went, they started to then it just stopped.
No, I understand. Do you know if you bought June bearing strawberries or ever bearing strawberries?
I think they're just June bearing. This is only their second year, and last year. I mean, they were just kind of growing last year, so I don't really know if they were going to produce more or not.
Right.
And then the cantaloupe ended up growing over them.
Ha! Ha! Typical.
So I kind of just let that happen.
Yeah, that's a typical gardening story. So, in other words, we don't know. The garden got overgrown, and maybe I would have gotten more strawberries. Maybe I didn't, but I was more interested in the cantaloupe, which I will tell you, by the way, is a misnomer, that what you grew is not a cantaloupe of any kind. You grew what are called the netted melons, the melons that have the netting on the outside, netted skin.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Those are musk melons.
Why are they called cantaloupes?
For the same reason that sweet potatoes are called yams. Somebody used the wrong word 100 years ago, and it'll never go away.
Oh, like the Brontosaurus apatosaurus,
bro. Oh, that still breaks my heart. I'm reading a book on that right now. Don't get me.
Interesting.
Don't get me. I love dinosaurs. All right, so listen. There have been a lot of intense climactic conditions. Before, your last run of strawberries seemed to get a little bit smaller and take longer to progress. Did you get one of these 100-degree weeks or 18 inches of rain or something?
Now that I think about it, it was right after we had that hot week when it was 90.
Yeah. No. So basically, John, there's two kinds of strawberries. There are June bearers. These are larger berries. But true to their name, just produce for several weeks around June. There is another type of strawberries called everbearing. These are, personally, I enjoy the everbearing more. These are smaller. These are not the giant ones you see in the clamshells in the supermarkets. Anytime I see everbearings for sale, I buy them. These are about half the size of the June berries, but are very sweet and produce all summer long. So I think you have June berries. I think your plants were just about done. And it is not unusual for the last run of something like this to get kind of blanched out or something like that. And if you want to extend the harvest and you've had luck, it sounds like you're having a lot of luck gardening, I would look into planting some everbearings as well.
Okay, that's great.
But I think, you know, true to their name, June berries, June peas, lettuce, spinach, anything that really thrives at the beginning of summer, if it gets hit with a heat lamp, it's just going to wilt.
All right, thank you.
Good luck, sir.
All right, bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and harvest my snow peas, snap peas, string beans, and summer squash while the fruits are still nice and small. Yes, some crops like peppers, tomatoes, and winter squash should be left to ripen on the vine, but many garden favorites taste best when tiny, and frequent picking will ensure the biggest possible harvest. But don't go plucking those pods just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and a dissertation on ivy-covered walls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden. Burpee is dedicated to providing all things needed for planting and growing gardens. Information, instructions, supplies, and more online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we'll be getting to the question of the week pretty soon now. Does ivy climbing up a wall damage it, or could true ivy somehow be protecting the wall's surface? It's an interesting question, isn't it? But before we get to that interesting question, we're going to take lots of your interesting questions at 1-888-346-9499. Chuck, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Chuck. How are you, sir?
Good, thanks.
And where is Chuck good?
Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania.
Okay, a fine suburb of our fine city. What can we do for Chuck in Bryn Mawr?
Well, I have 8 arborvitae trees, which is a.
Do you want me to tell you what's wrong with them? Without you saying another word.
Go ahead.
Okay, 3 possible things. You either have these things you thought were pine cones that are actually bagworms, deer have eaten portions of your arborvitae, or the hellish winter storms we've gotten have broken branches off or bent them down sideways.
Well, it's neither one nor two, but it's part three.
Okay. You and the rest of the tri-state area, Chuck.
Right. Well, it's actually a story over a long period of time where the trees were planted 20 years ago as a privacy line when I put up a sunroom. And over the years, I think the trees were initially 10 to 12 feet. They've grown to probably at least 20 feet.
Right, which is what you expect with arborvitae.
And over the years, with all the storms we've had, a lot of the branches would be weighed down by wet snow, and I would be out there all hours of the night shaking the trees, getting on a ladder so that, you know, knock off the snow so they'd bound back up. And over the years, that worked. And then last fall, they were so tall, and I was concerned about Hurricane Sandy, that I had the trees cut.
Oh, you topped them?
Tops, and yeah.
There's no road back.
Pardon me?
There's no road back from that. Who did that for you?
A tree company, I guess, that didn't know what they were doing.
And they didn't argue with you? They didn't tell you that this should never be done to these columnar trees?
No.
Oh, my God. As you've sadly learned, the tip is the only part of the tree that grows. You should be angry at the tree service. You know, I know people have to make money, but there comes a time when you need to be a professional. If somebody calls out a tree service and says, I want you to top these blue spruce, these arborvitae, these Leyland cypress, the tree service should go, we really advise against that. The trees will look lousy for a couple of years, then they'll die a premature death. But for them not to have warned you that this was, you know, child endangerment almost seems criminal to me. So my advice to you is that they should come out. When they come out, make sure you have the roots pulled, because otherwise you can't plant something in that spot because it's already filled.
Right.
So you're going to have to eat your mistake. I would have them pulled out because they're never going to look good again. And it sounds like you didn't want the height or need the ultimate height, right?
I didn't need the ultimate height. And
what do you need? 10 feet, 12 feet, 14 feet?
Yes, in that range, about 12 to 14 feet.
Okay. Since you planted these trees, arborvitaes have gone through a lot of improvements. You should be able to get a type of arborvitae that will top out right where you need it to be. You might also want to look at a very similar-looking plant called Leyland cypress, which provides the same kind of thing. Or if you think that maybe 10 feet might do it, ornamental grasses are much easier to grow and replace. But if you decide to go for tree cover again, get an improved variety of arborvitae or kind of a dwarfed-out Leyland cypress, they'll be able to handle snow load better. Or if you want dramatic plants that you can plant the heck out of, that are easy to replace, very low care, I really like ornamental grasses as a privacy screen.
Well, great. Those are great suggestions. I'll discuss them with my wife. And
I'm still mad at your tree toppers, man.
Well, I don't know how mad I should be. Let's see what what it's going to cost me to do the other thing now.
Oh, you'll be hopping mad then.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike.
Good luck, Chuckster.
Okay, bye.
1-888-346-9499. Irene, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Irene. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you.
And where does Irene do well?
I live in Burlington County, New Jersey. I live just a few minutes down the road from where you appeared recently in Smithville.
Oh, that was a great event, that great historic site. They have this.
It is beautiful, yes.
Earth Fair, Eco Fair every year. They've had me back a couple of years in a row. That is one of my absolute favorite events. I hope they have me back again. All right, what can we do for Irene in New Jersey?
I have a wonderful, wonderful historic yard. Or I should say some of the plants are wonderful, others are not. One that is wonderful and that has me worried is an old rose bush.
Right.
It is at least 75 years old because our previous owners were there for 60 plus years. They planted it the year they moved into the house, and we've been there 17 years, so it's probably closer to 80 years old. It has done really well up until, I think it was two springs ago. The new canes came up in the spring, and then the branches that grow off the new canes were somehow, I could only describe them as like miniaturized, like super dwarfed. They grew just a couple inches long with mini, mini, mini leaves, and they quickly dried up and fell off, although canes survived.
This unhealthy new growth. It didn't look like a different plant, did it? It just looked like tiny...
Looked absolute... the cane that goes out in the spring, the new cane was proper size, proper length. It grows out several feet. And then the new growth, the leaves look pretty much exactly like rose leaves.
Good, good.
And a stem, but super shrunken.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. That's, you know, I was afraid you might have the rose virus that a lot of people are talking about. But this sounds much more normal. Okay, so. I think we're fine. How do we care for this rose? Is it mulched? Do you feed it? And do you prune it?
I have never fed this thing, ever. We prune it back. Each year at the end of the summer, just once.
Stop right there. Mistake.
Okay.
Big mistake. What you're doing, you should prune nothing in the fall. Absolutely nothing. In the fall, plants like roses are trying to go dormant. Pruning stimulates growth. So, and this is a senior citizen. So there's probably not a lot of gas left in the tank. And the senior citizen is trying to send its remaining energy down to its root system to survive the winter. Meanwhile, your pruning forces it to grow instead, kind of slapping it awake when it wants to go to sleep. You are sapping energy from the plant by pruning in the fall. Now, is there any mulch underneath the plant?
Only what dies there with the old leaves and things.
Okay. That should be raked away. Old leaf matter under roses is not necessarily good for the plant. So that should be raked away. And if you want to apologize for pruning it in the fall, I would spread a good inch of compost, yard waste compost, underneath that plant. Because there's plenty of growing time left. And wait till you see what that does to give the plant some energy again, because it probably can't reach any nutrients in the soil anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the time to prune a rose is either in the dead of winter or 2 weeks after it starts growing again in the spring. So clean up underneath, spread an inch of compost, and then over the course of this summer, be good about deadheading roses after they fade. Just go out with a pair of pruners. Make sure you remove the old dead roses. But do
I always do that.
But do no other pruning unless you see a bad branch or something.
Okay. How about the canes, the big canes with these mini branches that have all died off?
You always remove a dead portion of a plant as soon as you see it.
Okay. Should I cut off the cane as well, then?
You may. If the rose is very heavily crowded, if it hasn't really been pruned, there's nothing wrong with removing entire canes. And especially, although I would urge you to do less than more now as we enter the summer.
Right.
And then do most of your pruning next year in May.
Okay. We can do that.
And I predict it's going to make a tremendous comeback.
Here's hoping.
All right, Irene?
All righty. Thanks very much.
All right. Good luck. 1-888-346-9499. Vern, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you? Pleasure talking to you.
It's a pleasure talking to you, Vern. Where are you, man?
I'm in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
I know where that is. What can we do for Vern in Allentown?
Well, I have a compost bin. It's a plastic compost bin. I've been composting in that bin about 4 years. And listening to you on a regular basis, I know what you like to see in compost. And basically, I think I've played the game the right way. I grind up leaves in the fall and even sometimes in the spring. I use coffee grounds from my local Starbucks and my own coffee pot. And I put nothing in there except kitchen veggie cuttings and chopped up or smashed eggshells. That's the only thing that's animal that ever goes in there.
Right.
Well, I'm happy with the results. I got some really good black stuff for my garden. But there's a little bug, it's like a beetle-shaped bug, half inch or less in length, gray, medium gray in color, has antenna, has a bunch of legs on the bottom, and stripes or ridges across the body, and the back part of the body. And I'm just wondering if these guys are making my compost been better, or if there's something I should do about them to get rid of them.
Okay, so this is in your bin.
Right, and in the bin.
Are they moving through the material? Are they sitting on top? Are they playing cards? Are they watching little bug TVs?
No bug TV, no cards that I could see. They're moving through the material. And one more thing is that in another part of my yard, I mean, 60, 70 feet away from this bin, mm-hmm. I have a raised flower garden. It's because of the terrace of the yard. And anyway, the point is that I have trouble growing plants there, flowers there. I've lost a couple of azaleas. I lost a rhododendron there. And when I dig in that area, those guys are everywhere. Hmm. Same looking bug.
Okay. Well, azaleas and rhododendrons need acidic soil. Have you done something to acidify the soil for these plants?
Yeah, I've used the Holytone.
Okay. And you're saying these bugs are like beetles, but they're in the soil.
Well, they're I call them beetles because they're beetle shaped, but they're soft. You know, if you could crush them with your finger, if you were so apt to do so.
Would other people perhaps call these roly polies or sow bugs or pill bugs?
I don't know. Maybe a pill bug. I'm not sure. I just know they're gray. They've got antenna. They've got stripes or ridges, I should say, in the back.
Okay. And do they roll up?
Well, thinking that I was going to call you today, I got one last night, put it in a jar, put some plastic on it, and put some poke some holes, thinking that it was still going to be alive, and
right.
It didn't make it through the night, so I've got a corpse there. But it's now rolling. It just all dried up. I guess it needed more moisture.
But it did roll into a ball when it dried?
Yeah, and when
okay.
It died, it rolled
yeah.
into a ball.
First of all, what you have is a very normal denizen of the compost pile, and you can look these up. There are various creatures. They're not true insects. They're more related, I believe, to like lobsters and other crustaceans. These
wow.
are ancient creatures, commonly called roly-polies, pill bugs, and or sow bugs. I'm not sure which one you have. If you go to our website, go to You Bet Your Garden,
okay.
And click on Garden Answers A to Z and go to any of those names under the alphabet, R for roly-poly, P for pill bug, S for sow bug. I did an article on how to tell the difference between these creatures years and years ago, so I don't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all there archived at the A to Z Answers. They are decomposers. They are like ants and worms. They are actually moving the organic matter in your compost along. Sometimes during really wet times or early in the season, they will cause damage in a garden, but they are not what damage your azalea or rhododendron.
Okay.
They are mostly eaters of decomposed or decomposing plant material and are actually pretty much considered helpful. Now, they're often around the scene of a crime in a garden because
mm-hmm.
they are opportunistic. So if
mm-hmm.
slugs eat holes in tomatoes, roly-polies might be seen feeding on the tomato. But they didn't cause the damage. They came in afterwards.
Okay.
And a lot of people like to consider them pests. I cannot. They will sometimes eat very small starts out in the vegetable garden early in a wet season.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, they don't cause problems. I think your compost is too wet. I think you may be putting in too many kitchen scraps. You sound like you're well on the way to becoming a master composter. So I would urge you to investigate getting a worm bin for inside your house.
Okay.
And feeding the bulk of your kitchen waste that is not coffee grounds or eggshells to your worms. When you make compost out of shredded fall leaves, coffee grounds, and you're welcome to put the eggshells in, that's the best compost you're going to make. The kitchen scraps don't add anything to the finished compost. They help you get rid of your kitchen scraps, but they can keep the compost too wet, and they can attract too many of these creatures.
Okay.
So yeah, I think you need to divert your kitchen scraps, but the good news is that these creatures are largely benign. They can become troublesome sometimes, but they would never be able to take out a big plant like an azalea or a rhododendron.
I appreciate that, Mike, and I'm really happy that my roly-polies are not going to be not doing any damage to the yard.
No, they're moving it along for you.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right, Vern. Take care.
Okay, bye now.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and give a shout-out to my friends at Fox Chapel Publishing, who issued the brand-new third edition of my tomato-growing book, now titled The You Bet Your Garden Guide to Growing Great Tomatoes Last Spring, and who just sent me the really brand-new French language edition, geared towards Canadian love apple lovers. But don't go looking for a picture of the cover and my author's bio in French at our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and some straight talk about ivy growing up buildings. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden. Burpee is dedicated to providing all things needed for planting and growing gardens. Information, instructions, supplies, and more online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. Does ivy climbing up those hallowed halls and walls damage the walls, or could it somehow be protective? We'll take a close look at ivy on buildings after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Ed, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you, Mike. I'm calling you from beautiful Willingboro, New Jersey.
Excellent. And what can we do for Ed in the Garden State?
Well, I collect all of my leaves every year. I have a pretty good-sized property. And what I do is I just pen them up and dump them in there. I don't turn them or do anything like that. And the following year, I use the ones from the previous year to put in the pots and things that I have all around my garden where I use annuals.
Right.
So this, sometimes the compost is very leafy. It doesn't break down all the way because I don't. I just pick them up with my riding mower,
right?
And just dump them in whole.
But Ed, when you pick them up, so to speak, with your riding mower, they are being shredded by the blade on the mower, right?
Yes. You're right. They're not whole leaves, but you know they're pretty big chunks.
Okay.
So here's what I do, though. So I'll pick the pots that I have, and I dump all of them in the spring, and I pile all that up. And then the following year, I mix that dirt with new compost and use it again.
Right.
My wife says I probably shouldn't be doing that.
The only reason not to do that would be if you were growing tomatoes or if the plants in the pots the previous year showed signs of disease.
Oh, okay. I don't do any vegetables, but I do have quite a number of flower pots.
Right, and if the plants are doing well and they're healthy, you know, typically in a raised bed garden, Ed, we're always keeping the old soil. We're just adding fresh compost to the surface. But you don't use any potting soil. You're just using what the French call leaf mold, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Or sometimes when I get down to the bottom, because I use my tiller to break it up a little bit.
Right.
And so I do get a little dirt in there when I'm getting near the bottom. But
just garden soil. You're not putting anything in to lighten the pots.
No.
Okay, so you've been really lucky, Ed.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. So one thing I'll tell you, I don't turn my compost either. But a lot of times, depending on environmental conditions, leaves will break down or there'll be a little recalcitrant. But no matter what, the bottom of a big pile will always have finished compost.
Yeah.
So the one job that you do may want to have to do, so to speak, is to get a pitchfork, move the top of the pile away, and then as you get towards the bottom, you're not going to see a lot of leaf anymore. You're going to see just that rich black compost.
Yeah, well, I do see that when I get down to it. But like I said, I usually just jump in there with my tiller and start breaking it up, and I throw that into it and mix it up with the dirt from the previous year, and off we go.
You may enjoy using the tiller. Men seem to like to use power equipment that makes their arms vibrate for days afterwards. But, you know, if you want to do one simple thing to make more compost and make it even better is when you're assembling this pile in the fall, mix in as many coffee grounds as you can scrounge up.
Oh, really?
Yes, coffee grounds are the perfect addition to shredded leaves. Shredded leaves and coffee grounds together make the best compost, and I guarantee your compost will be made faster. More of your leaves will become compost, because the nitrogen in the coffee grounds will feed the living organisms that fuel the composting process.
Well, I'll start saving those coffee grounds in the fall.
And if you got a big leaf pile, don't be shy about going to coffee shops and restaurants with a big 5-gallon bucket and saying, "Can you fill this up for me?"
I have that size pile too, Mike.
All right, well you go, Thank man. You caffeinate it up, and you'll be cooking.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Ed. Good luck, sir.
Thank you. Goodbye.
1-888-346-9499. Bob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I am doing just fine, sir. How are you?
Good, thank you.
And
I have a question for you.
I have a question for you first, Bob.
Okay.
Where are you?
Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. And do you think you're going to stay Jim Thorpe? There's all that controversy where, you know, part of his family wants to take his remains back to an Indian reservation.
Right, I heard that.
You'd have to go back to being Monk Chunk or...
Yeah, Monk Chunk.
Yeah, I like Jim Thorpe better.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a nice place, whatever you call it.
What can we do for Bob so far in Jim Thorpe?
I've got, I think, the Mugo Pine up here.
Okay.
And it's got a lot of little foam, and underneath, my wife was picking off little black bugs off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be the only tree that's affected by this.
Okay. How long have you had the tree?
Well, about 6 years, 7 years.
Okay. Is it fed or mulched?
Neither.
Okay, good. What kind of situation is it growing in? Is it a specimen tree kind of out in the open?
I'd say it's about 6 feet from the house, out in the front. Gets noon, all the way to afternoon.
That's fine. So, that's fine. These kind of evergreens don't need a tremendous amount of sun. The only problem is with any evergreen, if it never gets sun on one side, that side will slowly lose its needles.
Sure, sure. Well, right now the whole thing seems to be losing its needles, except for the tips that seem to be getting new growth.
Okay, so you have a real serious insect infestation there.
Yes.
Okay, so now describe to me exactly what you see on the tree.
It's like white foam at the base of some of the needles.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we go through the foam, there are little black bugs underneath of it.
And little...
Maybe they have like black and brown on it.
Okay, but the foam does not look like webbing.
No, it looks like white foam. It's like soap bubbles almost.
Okay, and the creatures underneath are very small, and they don't resemble caterpillars of any kind.
No, no.
Okay, so
they look like little, like almost like real small miniature beetles or something.
Okay,
real small.
Okay. Oh man.
They seem to be the things that are kicking out the foam, because that seems to be where all the foam is. When
there are a lot of beetles that are attacking pines right now.
Oh, are there? Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, most of the kind of famous imported ones are much larger than this, very distinctive, the different pine bark beetles. And they're not attacking the bark. They're some sort of pine needle pest.
Yeah, it seems to be at the base of the pine needles, and then where they are, that's where all the pine needles are dying off.
Okay.
And the whole branch seems to be dying back.
And this just happened this spring?
Yes. Before, we had yellow or orange caterpillars all over it.
What'd you do for that?
We took care of that. Ended up spraying vinegar on it. That seemed to knock them all off.
Oh, no. When was this?
Oh, about 2 years ago, three years ago.
Don't ever do that again. Vinegar's an herbicide.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, vinegar is what you spray on weeds to kill them.
Oh, all right.
Who told you vinegar?
A friend of mine.
Yeah, he's no friend.
Oh, okay.
That probably severely weakened the tree, man.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah. There are many organic ways to take care of caterpillar pests. You can spray BT, which is organic. You could have just sprayed them with an insecticidal soap or a horticultural oil. But no, vinegar is what you spray on a plant that you don't want around anymore.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, where would I get this oil or the soap?
Any big independent garden center will have what's called insecticidal soap or horticultural oil. And you have to be careful. You want a light oil. There's a different type of oil that you spray in the winter time. Which you may want to use if this tree survives. It sounds like it's been attacked pretty savagely. The first thing I want you to do is get out there with a hose and a nozzle that you can adjust to a very sharp setting.
Okay.
And hold the branches in one hand and really intensely spray these areas of spittle.
Oh. Okay.
And physically dislodge them off the tree.
Is this all I would really need instead of getting the
We don't know yet, but this is what we're going to do to stop the damage. You're going to do this every morning until you don't see any new damage.
Okay.
And then we're going to back off. Now, does the tree have grass growing around it? What's underneath it?
Dirt, plants, needles. No grass, though.
Okay, good. Well, I want you to give the pine a nice little dusting of compost down there.
Yeah, I have some of that in the back.
Okay, good. Put some down around the plant. Give it some natural nutrition. And then I want you to call your county extension office, and they can probably identify the insect. And then if the water alone doesn't stop this, they can give you some advice on what to do and try to get organic advice. In the back of my head, I'm thinking there is a specific pest that attacks these ornamental pines. And if you go online and even search Mugo Pine pests, you'll probably see your pest right away.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure what they are, but let's get them off the tree.
Okay, so just spray them and keep spraying it.
Yeah, you may find that one good knockdown, like tomorrow morning, is all you need to do. Or you may need to stay on it every day for like a week. hopefully within a couple of days, no new little nests will appear.
Okay, okay. That sounds great. I'll go.
And that'll give the tree some time to recover before it gets really intensely hot, and then find out what we got. And if the people who help you identify the pest don't offer any organic solutions, just call us back and tell me what it is.
Great. Hey, thank you so much.
All right, good luck, Bob.
And you have a nice day.
Bye-bye. You too.
Thank you.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Will ivy-covered walls come tumbling down? Alexis Landis, please read us this week's question.
Sure, Mike. We heard from Andy, Director of Facilities, Ursinus College in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, who writes, Mike, does English ivy damage structures? Web searches have turned up mixed answers. Some on campus want it off, others like the way it looks. The buildings in question are mostly wood, some masonry, approximately 100 to 150 years old. Our carpenter is concerned that the ivy is holding moisture and providing a highway for ants and other destructive insects to get to the wood, which never gets sun or a breeze and is always damp.
Well, with questions like this, I always reach out to the American Ivy Society. And I was delighted to find that Russ Windle, who helped our show Loin About Ivy on Trees many moons ago, was still their director of research. He sent me a number of studies to review, but also warned that when people complain about, quote, English ivy, the culprit is frequently a different vine, like the more aggressive Irish ivy or something like Virginia creeper. And he's right. As I drove through Center City, Philly recently, the majority of, quote, ivy-covered walls were covered with plants that were clearly not ivy. So that's job number one. Have your specific climbing plants professionally identified. Now, the Society has produced an annotated reference list that delivers abstracts on 18 different articles on the topic. Most of these papers appeared in ivy journals under titles like Dispelling the Myths, False Accusations, and In Defense of Ivy, and make the case that true English ivy poses no danger to a solid wall with sound mortar, and it may actually insulate walls against extreme changes in temperature. And rather than keep the walls wet, it is suggested that, again, true English ivy with its waxy coating may divert rain away and keep the surface drier. This highlights the importance of knowing exactly what you got, as other climbing vines may not have water-shedding leaves. An article from the Brick Institute of America pretty much sums up the issue with its opening line, "There is no single easy answer." The Bricksters conclude that it is possible that ivy could dislodge, quote, masonry units of walls not properly constructed. And that's a line you hear over and over again. The better shape the wall was in before any ivy appeared, the less you need to worry. They note that the plant growth might keep moisture trapped against the wall, or it might act to shed rainwater. Worried custodians are advised to remove a small area of ivy for inspection. Now, a recent lengthy report out of Oxford University examines the effects of ivy growing on truly old buildings in England. One interesting finding is the role of, quote, ivy as concealer. The researchers found that some of the buildings had important architectural features that were being hidden by the ivy, like plaques, statues in alcoves, inscriptions, and such, and that study of the building's historical features had become impossible without removal of the ivy. But when the ivy was removed, most of the area it was covering was found to be in, quote, astonishingly good condition. In addition, rigorous scientific studies concluded that ivy was an excellent insulator, moderating daytime temperatures by 36% and nighttime ones by 15%. Dampness was harder to pin down, but in general, they found that areas under ivy were less humid than unprotected areas. Perhaps most striking was the protective effect against particulate air pollution in high traffic areas. Ivy clearly kept pollutants off the walls. A huge benefit, as I've seen the damage air pollution has done to many of Philadelphia's great historic buildings. When the tower of City Hall was cleaned a while back, it completely changed color. And what of the famed Ivy League, that group of colleges that are named either for their ivy-covered buildings, or, as some historians suggest, for the Roman numeral IV, as there were four of them in the original group? Turns out that many of them are covered in Boston ivy, an aggressive plant that's not a true ivy of any kind. Princeton University, whose buildings are adorned with true English ivy, has made a clear pro-plant choice. When it came time for the stonework on some of their buildings to be repointed, the ivy was carefully removed, attached to scaffolding, and replaced when the work was done. Now, I couldn't find any references for ivy growing on wooden buildings. So my suggestion is to uncover and inspect a few areas visually and begin measuring the relative humidity under the vines and against bare surfaces. If the area is being kept damp, the ivy probably should be removed. But if the buildings are sound and the ivy is true, Ursinus might turn out to be unique. You'd be in an ivy league of your own. Well, that sure was some interesting information about hallowed halls of ivy, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over carefully, with links to all of the research articles we just cited, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to plant ivy around my outsides. If I don't get out of this studio, we must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live, put the actual subject in the subject line, and check Voiced to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems in our Garden Answers A to Z section, listen to this show, listen to old shows, download this week's podcast, and follow us on Facebook. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is WHYY senior engineer Fred Snyder. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's Internet Illuminati. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at our Facebook page. Our ivy-covered editor is Al Banks. Rarely seen crawling up walls are our interns Jolie Higassi and Cecily Garber. The well-educated Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I went to a school in the Poison Ivy League, Mike McGrath, but I'll calamine up and see you next week. For some, the 4th of July means fireworks, but for garlic growers, it heralds harvest time. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll look at the many ways you can preserve those tasty garlic cloves. Plus your fabulous phone calls.